we present The Wolf Far Hence, a serial thriller in six parts by Edward Boyd. Part two, The Net.
Rogers and Hart went lyrical about a small hotel, but not the one, no, certainly not the one at Loch Darrick. Charles Adams would have been more likely to enthuse about the Loch Darrick Hotel and the people gathered there. Myself, Steve Gardner, a reluctant and rejected Galahad, who found the lady, Judy Clark, not too unhappy with the dragon, whose name was Peter Calder, a bird fancier in every sense of the term. Then there was Inspector Gordon, obsessed with an unsolved crime that had just celebrated its first birthday, who saw the same ingredients come together again and wondered why and where and when. Gordon and I went pounding up the stairs and along the corridor. The screaming had ceased, but we could still hear Judy sobbing. The sound was harrowing, childish, despairing, lonely. She was standing at the window, staring out at the black landscape. She went very still as we came into the room. Calder lay on the floor between us. He was wearing a dressing gown that must have been strident on him alive and was blasphemous on him dead.
What happened here?
He's dead.
Are you all right, Judy?
Dead.
Judy.
I didn't mean to do it.
Don't say anything.
She's in shock. Get her out of here.
Now come along, Judy. I took her along the corridor to an empty room. She sat on a cold, cheerless bed and cried herself out, while I stood there looking at the window, which was a framed picture of nothing. Every now and again, the lights of a car on the other side of the lock would energize the darkness for a moment, then leave the blackness blacker, as I stood there feeling quietly spare.
Do you think there are people who attract death?
No.
I do.
I think there are people who get more than their fair share of misfortune. In my experience, they're usually the good ones.
Unsolicited testimonial.
Want to talk about Calder?
No.
You'll have to sooner or later.
I'll talk at the right time and to the right people.
Well, that takes care of me. I don't think you realize yet how serious this is.
Look, don't start patronizing me.
I only want to help you as much as I can.
Why?
Because I feel partly responsible.
Do you? Or are you just trying to get into the act?
Why are you so bitter?
Why shouldn't I be bitter? First of all, you go on about being partly responsible. Then you drivel on about wanting to help.
You can't
have it both ways. You can't be the incendiary and the fireman.
I'm trying to be sorry, but you're making it very difficult.
It doesn't matter anymore. Can't I get that through your thick head? I don't care.
About this Calder business.
What do you want to know? Were we having a thing together? Yes, we were. What else do you want to know? The lurid details? How he compared with you?
You know better than that.
I don't know anything anymore.
Not even why you killed him?
What do you say?
You're in trouble, Judy.
But I didn't do it. How could anyone...
How could anyone not?
You think I killed him, don't you? Don't you?
I don't care.
I don't care whether you care or not. The point is, you do think I did. But you're being noble. You rather fancy yourself as a loyal comrade through thick and thin.
Pardon my loyalty.
It's not loyalty, it's hypocrisy. I'll tell you something. I did not kill Calder. I'm sorry he's dead, but he was no great bargain. You and he had a lot in common. Which only means that as far as men are concerned, I shouldn't be allowed out alone. Point taken?
Point taken.
Then please go away and nauseate someone else.
I went back along the corridor to the room where Calder lay. The door was locked. And for a moment, I was aware of irritation. He's not going to run away, I thought. or walk away, or hop, skip, and jump away. He was in the only state where you can go away without moving. And a bit of Mozart moved in my mind. That bit about days of philandering being over. And it didn't seem to me much of an epitaph. Stairway to the hall was dark, filled with wrong shadows. The carpet seemed to crackle underfoot. At the end of the hall, I found Inspector Gordon. He was having technological trouble.
Hello. Hello. Hello.
Oh, here it all was the same always.
Was the phone out of order?
Yes, it was the same a year ago. Hello. Hello. Oh, the cable goes across the lock. It's no use. Hello. I'm wasting my time. Do you know there was a gamekeeper once came here to phone when his wife was having a baby, and by the time he got through, it was the baby that answered the telephone. And how is the lady?
Highly articulate.
May she remain so.
Are you pleased with yourself?
Now, why should I be that, God?
There's a new career opening up for you in futurology.
Tell me. Well, that's very reassuring.
You said something earlier on.
Remind me of it.
Something was going to happen, you suggested. But you said that Judy and I were somehow outside of it. We were irrelevant, you said.
Indeed I did.
Oh, by God, we won't become suddenly relevant with a bang. The question is, are we all relevant to the same thing?
I am just not quite with you.
You're a friend of Judy, aren't you?
I've known her for a long time.
All right, then. Are you relevant to the thing that lies in the room upstairs, or are you relevant to Judy? Are you a policeman or a friend?
I'm both.
Not on, Gordon. You have to make a choice.
The choice is already made for me. Before anything else, or anyone else, I am a policeman.
Well, now we know. Was Calder here last year when the tinker was murdered?
He was not.
But I gather he's no stranger to the district.
He's been coming here since he was a boy. I suppose he's taken more fish from the loch than any other man in the country.
And what else did he take?
He took liberties.
Oh, I love that phrase.
And there was a bit of a scandal about, about 7 years ago. A poor neurotic woman who lived in a big house about 3 miles down the road.
Rich?
Comfortable. She'd spent the best years of her life looking after a terrible old tyrant of an invalid mother. When the old lady died, the house and the money came to her.
And so did Calder.
Yes.
And he conned her.
Out of every last penny.
And what happened to the woman?
She slashed her wrists. And then after she came out of hospital, she sold the house and went away.
How did Calder die?
He was stabbed. Stabbed several times by someone in a panic. Or maybe in a mad fury. The weapon was lying beneath him.
What was it?
One of those long nail file things.
The kind of thing that Judy might have had.
If she had one, we'll find out.
She didn't do it, Gordon. I said she didn't do it.
Are you trying to convince me or yourself? Man, I don't like this business at all. There's a sort of dreary satisfaction in being right for the wrong reasons, but to be wrong for all the right reasons, it's the edge of madness.
Did you manage to get through on the telephone, Mr. Gordon?
I did not, Doris.
Oh, I sometimes wonder if there's any point in having that thing at all. It's neither useful nor ornamental.
Doris, I could not agree with you more.
Mr. Gordon, I've a confession to make.
Oh?
I was talking to Charlie Morris through in the bar just now. You know him? He's the gamekeeper's youngest boy.
Fine young man.
Well, he's going to a dance down in Ballarach. In his wee van, I told him to tell the police there had been an accident at the hotel. And would they bring a doctor and everything?
Doris, you are a chair.
Miss Clark, all right?
Oh, she's fine.
Anything else while I'm here?
Yes, maybe you could fix me up with a room.
Just sign the book. Room 12. The key's in the door.
Thank you, Doris.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I'll get back to the bar. Oh, it's going like a mill in there tonight. Captain Bevitt and his workers. And Mr. Kitt should be coming in soon for his supper. Oh, it's all go, isn't it?
All go indeed, darling.
Well, if you want anything, you know where I am.
As you said, a gem.
She runs this place practically single-handed.
Who's Mr. Ketch is coming in for his supper?
Oh, he's another of the regulars around here. He's a sort of an amateur naturalist.
He has an ominous name.
Is he?
There was a famous public hangman in the 18th century called Ketch.
Do you tell me?
I think I'll go and get smashed out of my mind.
Well, don't get smashed too far, because I'll be wanting a statement from you. In the meantime, I'll have another session with this infuriating telephonic devil box. Hello. Hello!
I climbed the stairs again and let myself into room 12 and prowled around it once or twice, establishing residence. The darkness outside seemed liquid and total and victorious, as though the moon and stars had drowned in wet tar. Somewhere an owl screamed as it pounced on something small and helpless. And I shook my head at the lousy, vulgar symbolism. You could have written the charms of room 12 on the head of a pin and still had space for one of the shorter works of Charles Dickens. Plus that the hour was beginning to depress me. What was so wise about flying around in the dark and screaming? Anybody could do it. It was no trick at all. No trick at all. So after a while, I went out and walked along the corridor and tapped on a door.
Who is it?
May I come in?
You want to?
I want to. Are you all right?
Yes, thank you.
Anything I can get you?
Nothing.
Something to eat, perhaps?
I'm not hungry. I'm sorry I said all these things to you.
I thought you were remarkably restrained. Anyway, I heal easily.
Too easily, perhaps.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Why didn't you answer my letters?
I'm still trying to work that out.
Was there another girl?
There was, but she wasn't the reason.
What was her name?
Shirley.
Were you in love with her?
No. She wasn't in love with me either. We were just two people cancelling something out for each other.
And what was it you were cancelling out?
You, perhaps?
That was horribly unfair to her, was it not?
Yes, I suppose it was.
I'd like a cigarette.
Certainly. Here we are.
Thank you. Did you feel threatened by me?
Not by you personally.
I'll have to explain that.
It's difficult.
Try.
Well, it seems to me that they're all resultants of all kinds of forces. For instance, I once called you jokingly a good Catholic girl. But behind the joke, it was true. With everything it implies.
Are you talking about marriage?
I couldn't see you settling for less.
And you're against marriage in principle.
I go around thinking, sometimes sincerely, that I have no particular beliefs about anything. And then every now and again, something happens to make me realize that almost in spite of myself, there are things I believe in.
But marriage isn't one of them.
I can't decide whether I have an impossibly high concept of marriage or an abysmally low opinion of it.
We could at least have talked about it.
I was frightened, perhaps. I had no good arguments against you.
You're a very competitive person.
Did call to talk about marriage?
Yes.
Are you listening attentively?
What makes you think so?
You know what someone once said? Women are very choosy about their lovers, but they'll marry practically anybody.
Oh, I'm the one that reversed that.
Well, Celia, your flatmate, reckoned he was after your money.
She was right.
Were you fond of him?
In a detached way. That's why I understand you and Shirley.
So, where do we go from here?
I don't know. But whatever happens has got to happen spontaneously and honestly.
I'll stick around, if I may.
You may.
I went back downstairs to the lounge. The fire was dying and the room had a strange red glow. There seemed to be bells ringing, but I wasn't sure whether they were in my head or outside. Then a man walked into the lounge. A big man, smooth pink skin, tight curly hair. A moustache clipped like an aristocratic hedge. Eyes like protuberant gray gooseberries. A big man. Big like a bull. But a bull that knew its way around the best china shops.
What's happened to the staff around here?
Well, they've all been enrolled as special constables.
I beg your pardon?
There's been an accident.
What kind of accident?
Oh, Inspector Gordon will be able to classify it when he turns up.
Gordon? Is he here?
He's down the hall somewhere, fighting a losing battle with a telephone.
Oh, damn, the thing isn't working again, I suppose.
Does it ever work?
It has lucid intervals, but they become fewer and further between. Trouble is, the cable goes across the lock. It always seems to be unserviceable.
Now, that could be serious in a remote place like this.
Exactly what I keep writing to the county authorities.
They'll probably wait until something happens.
Don't have to tell me about that. It already has happened to me. Oh, nothing world-shaking, of course, but it could have been worse. Could have been much worse.
Well, what was it?
Well, you see, about a year ago. I say, that's decidedly odd. It was exactly a year ago.
The day the tinker was murdered.
That's right. You heard about that?
It's part of the local folklore.
Huh? Oh, quite.
And what happened to you?
Well, you see, now, that morning, now I was out doing some rough shooting. Do you know this district at all?
No, not at all.
Beautiful country. Beautiful. Anyway, about a mile from here, there's a pretty rough stretch. Outcrop rock, that sort of thing, you know. I slipped and went over on my ankle. Now, damned painful, of course, but didn't really worry about it too much till the afternoon. Went up like a balloon. Couldn't hobble around without a stick. Now, next thing, I was laid low and decided to call in the quack.
And you couldn't get through?
Well, I could not. Now, hung on till next day. Very painful. Then I sent one of my chaps in the estate car to fetch old Doc Ferguson. Told me my ankle had been broken all the time.
Oh, some days it pays not to get up.
Huh?
A profound philosophical truth, Gardner.
No.
Oh. How are you, Captain Bevis?
Oh, tolerable, Gordon, tolerable. Now, what's this I hear about an accident?
A very nasty one, I'm afraid. I'm handling it at the moment, but you understand etiquette demands that the local police be informed as soon as possible.
Lucky you caught me here. This evening we finished clearing away that timber that was flattened in the big gale. Now, brought some of the estate workers along for a drink. Now, send one of them off in the shooting
range. Thank you, but it's all under control. Tell me, is Elspeth MacDonald celebrating with you?
Elspeth? Oh, dear. I mean, what's she got to do with timber?
Well, I understood that the local youth spent its time carving her name on trees.
Huh? Oh! Oh, jolly good, Gordon. I say you're a sardonic clot. Now, about this accident. Anything I can do? I have a little rudimentary medical knowledge.
Oh, we need the doctor purely as a formality.
Bad as that, eh?
As bad as it can be ever for Calder. Unless there's a hereafter.
Calder? Oh, that damned scoundrel.
He's dead.
What happened to him?
Should take about 2 hours to get to Ballarachenburg.
Did somebody chop him?
The local police and the doctor should be here about midnight.
Yes, well, you win, Gordon. But I can read between the lines. And if somebody's done in Calder, I'll wager there's a filly involved somewhere.
There is.
What? Oh. Oh, I'm so sorry. What an idiotic thing to say. Well, must get back to the chaps. No, please forgive me for saying that tomfool thing. Huh? Bit of a bull in a china shop sometimes. See you later.
Well, that was
Captain Siegfried Bevis of Darrig Lodge.
Siegfried?
His father had a passion for Wagner. Played the cello, I believe.
And what does Siegfried play?
He plays at being the local lord of the manor.
Does he play it well?
He's very popular locally. He's extremely generous when he has the money.
He doesn't look short of a few bob.
Oh,
Oh, the family had money right enough, but two lots of death duties in 10 years made a mighty big hole in it.
Pity the poor wretch. Bevis. But Bevis, the name's familiar.
Greatest athlete of the century, they called him once. Olympic gold medalist, 1952.
Of course. Pentathlon or decathlon or something like
that. That's the man.
I must remember to be nice to him in case he uproots a tree and hits me with it.
Inspector Gordon! Inspector Gordon! The telephone's working again!
Gordon went loping off triumphantly towards his restored communication. And when he had gone, I sat down and stared into the dying fire, not thinking at all. And gradually I began to feel sorry for myself. It seemed to me that I was sitting in the ruins of this or any other world. Far off in the bar, I could hear Bevis's estate workers. One of them was singing an interminable song. There was shouting and laughter, as though there were no private griefs anywhere. The coal fell from the fire. A piece of furniture stretched itself. Once, I thought I heard a mouse scraping thoughtfully behind the wall. I tried to read the magazines that lay around. There were pictures of a top model with no bottom. A woman writer, bright and hysterical, told me how to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Professor confidently predicted total pollution of the earth in 50 years. I'm ahead of you, I thought, Professor. It's happening to me, right here and now. And all at once I became aware of the little man who had just come into the lounge. He was bald and benevolent, plump, like Buddha, but better dressed.
A glorious night, is it not?
I'll have to take your word for it.
What I meant was, it was a glorious night for my purposes.
You wouldn't be Jack the Ripper.
My name is Ketch.
And Doris was worrying about your supper.
I've already reported myself in. You're from the South?
Yes.
London?
Yes.
And how is London these days?
It goes on and on.
I lived there for 7 years. Hated every minute of it. I've been out tonight looking for badgers.
And finally?
Not really. But I know there's a hoot a couple of miles down the loch. You know Craig's Point?
I don't even know Craig.
Oh. Are you in some sort of trouble?
Do I sound it?
You do, rather.
Then perhaps I am.
Is there anything I could do?
I don't think so.
If you needed money or anything?
Nothing like that, thank you.
I can't bear to see people in trouble. It hurts me physically. I don't know whether that's a sign of a soft heart or a soft head.
Well, that's a sign you know what trouble is.
Oh, I do. I do indeed. There seems to be a strange, restless atmosphere in the hotel tonight.
You think so?
Oh, yes. I'm tremendously susceptible to atmosphere, you know.
Really?
I think we all of us are, if we allow ourselves to be.
Why don't we?
Pressure of modern life, I suppose. I did tell you about the years I spent in London.
You did mention it, yes.
I was a tax consultant. I made a lot of money. I made a lot of money for myself and a lot of other people. I didn't make anything else.
Are you married?
No. That was something I missed out on. All the ordinary, normal, human, if you like, animal things. Well, I just seem to miss out on them. Are you married?
No. No, I missed out for different reasons.
When I packed it all in, I decided to, well, in a way, to go back to first principles, back to nature. It was strange, almost frightening, to get back one's sense of taste. Physical taste, of course. One's sense of smell. One's reactions became faster, like an animal's.
And one's sense of atmosphere.
Oh, that above all. I mean, you've heard of dogs howling before a death, haven't you?
Your supper, Mr. Ketch.
Oh, excuse me. Coming, Doris.
He went off towards the kitchen, and I sat there, hearing the singing and the shouting and the laughter. It was well after closing time, and I remembered a friend of mine going into a Highland hotel one evening in March and asking when the bar closed and being told October. Then Doris was back like Florence Nightingale on a big food kick.
Are you sure you won't eat, Mr. Gardner?
Oh, quite sure, thank you, Doris. Oh,
the liver and bacon's nice.
I'm sure it is.
So is the haggis and turnip.
I'm just not hungry.
Oh, nobody seems to be eating tonight.
Well, the atmosphere isn't exactly festive.
Maybe not, but I think at a time like this, it's important to keep your strength up. I could grill you some chops.
Doris, do you want me to put it in writing? I don't want anything to eat, thank you. Tell me, did you like Peter Calder?
Never thought too much about him.
I was wondering what you thought of him.
Well, he was a very attractive man, but...
Well, what was it you didn't like about him?
No, just something. The way he would look at you, like you were something to be used.
A great lover.
Oh, his big love affair was with himself. Mind you, he was always very nice to me, but I never thought he was that keen for tea.
Now you're back on food again. She went back to the kitchen and her infallible cure for all evils, food. And I had a brief vision of her sitting there for years among all those ruined victuals, like that mad old woman in Great Expectation. And then Ketch was back, quietly, apologetically. And if I'd been a badger, I would never have heard him. But if I'd been a badger, he would never have asked me the question he did.
Would it disturb you if I played the piano?
How many fingers do you use?
I'm quite proficient, I assure you.
Go ahead.
You may even find it soothing.
It's just possible.
I finally managed to persuade them to get the piano tuned here. Yeah.
I don't like your taste in incidental music.
Neither do I, Mr. Ketch.
Oh, you're the policeman.
What made you play that particular piece of music, Mr. Ketch?
I don't understand. It's a Chopin sonata. I like Chopin.
I am practically a musical illiterate, Mr. Ketch, but somehow I associate that music with funerals.
Yes, it has been you.
Why did you play that piece tonight of all nights?
I really don't see... Happened again, then. I knew it would. I stressed the point. Once you killed, I said, it's so easy to kill again.
Who did you say that to?
To someone who had killed someone else.
Someone who murdered a tinker?
Tell me who it was. Oh. It's your duty to tell me. I am a police officer.
I know. And that's precisely the reason. I can't tell you.
In part two of The Wolf Fire Hence by Edward Boyd, the parts were played as follows. Steve Gardner, Teddy Johnson, Detective Inspector Gordon, Moulter Kelso, Judy Clark, Janet Michael, Doris, Marjorie Yell, Captain Siegfried Bevis, Robert Urquhart, Jonathan Ketch, Walter Carr. The Wolf Far Hence was produced in our Glasgow studios by Eddie Fraser.